You know, Dr. Mark Tucuzella, who's a guy that you've got to have on sometime, because not only is he a sensational runner, but super smart guy, and he is doing more to research this than just about anybody else.
Faith, give me a little 1-2.
1-2.
4-3-4-5-6.
Check.
Okay, so we're ready? Go ahead, Scott. Kick this thing off.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Ward.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And tonight
Tonight we're missing Faith Goss, Scott.
You know we are.
And
she's a little ill.
You know, we depend on her like a three-legged stool.
Or she's running. Or she decided to bail and go running.
That's possible. But we depend on her like a three-legged stool. And sometimes, Scott, when I go to lean towards her, I feel like we're going to tip over. So we'll have to use our guest tonight to be our third leg. And he is a veteran at Trail Runner Nation. Is he not?
He's a returning guest and one of our best and highest downloaded guests, well. Dr. Mark Tucuzella. Thanks for joining, Mark.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back, and I think is this our fourth broadcast? I think it's fourth or fifth.
I think if it is four, we've done them extended versions, so it's somewhat like a fifth. If you're counting total minutes, we're at least at five or six.
But it's been a while since we've chatted with you.
At least a month or a little more. Things have been crazy, I'm sure, in your world too.
And tonight we have a special treat because we've turned on our Skype. We have the cameras on, and now it's no longer voices without faces. We are looking at one another.
No anonymity,
right? So tonight the topic is going to come directly from Dr. Mark Tucuzella's website, where he is putting up some tips of the week. Are you not, Dr. Mark?
Yeah, there may be every other week, but whenever something kind of new comes up, we'll throw it up. We're trying not to make the site too busy, but people can't kind of like really short, quick things they can read and maybe go out and play with or apply that day when they're on the trail or the streets.
Let's talk about that website. It's naturalrunningcenter.com, correct?
Correct.
And I know that because I tell people all the time, you need to go check out naturalrunningcenter.com and set aside some time and get on that and start to study and learn. And at the bottom, if you scroll down, you will see a YouTube video, 8 minutes and 24 seconds long. That's exactly what it is, because I want people to identify it when they see it. And it's Dr. Tucuzella running and slowing some things down, talking about body mechanics. And if you ever experience an injury, you need to really think about body mechanics, because we're built to run. We were born to run. And Dr. Mark shows us that proper body mechanics keeps us safe. And as soon as we start to drift out of proper body mechanics, you can start to look for hints of strain and sprains and overuse injury. And that's one of the reasons for the topic tonight. We have three great new training tips.
And they're all revolve around mechanics,
body mechanics. And so our trail doctor, Dr. Tucuzella, not only has spent 25 years as a physician, he's also our trail doctor and helps tear our body mechanics apart and helps build us back up.
You know, if you don't mind, I'm going to throw these things out of order because of our run this morning. I caught myself doing something on here or not doing something on here.
Yeah.
And I think that
let me guess which one it would be.
Actually, you probably say all three.
Depends on which part of the run.
No, as we were coming up our last climb near the end of the run, I was hunched over and I caught myself and I thought, I got to stand up, man. I don't know if I was tired or what. I'm sure I was tired. But one of the tips that you give is that you should lengthen your posture. What do you mean by that?
I think it's the proper term for just get yourself in a tall, neutral posture. If you look at how, you know, Don and Scott, if you look at how we apply force to the ground, if we're in a proper body position, when you apply force to the ground, you won't leak that energy. So when you lean forward or lean back, it's I think Jay DeSherry describes this best in his book. And if you haven't read this book, it's called Anatomy for Runners by Jay DeSherry. And it'll take what we talk about here tonight, but really outline it and show you a lot of pictures. But if you're, it's kind of like a slingshot analogy. So if your core is not in the proper position, and so say that supporting arm, for example, is all loose or not stable, and you apply a force or pull that slingshot back, which is in essence what running is, you're applying a force to the ground, everything just leaks. And I think we know that if we're leaning back and we strike the ground, all those forces go in the wrong way. So just by being tall, you align yourself and can apply the forces the correct way, whether you're running up a hill or down a hill. So everyone has to push against the ground to get off the ground, and we want those forces to transfer efficiently. So almost like you're going right up your spine, up through your occiput in a straight line. And if that line's not straight, you're going to be losing energy.
So body mechanics and strength comes from torsion of the body, the torso and relative to the hips. They torque, one goes one direction, and then the pelvis goes the opposite direction. So there's a torquing mechanism. And a lot of our power comes from that and not necessarily the directly from our thighs. Is there truth to that? Is that where posture comes in and is so important?
I think what you're trying to avoid actually is that torquing motion, or that what we call shear force. If everything is fully aligned, then there is no shear force. There is no torque force. Similar to, you know, if you go to any developing part of the world and folks can carry, you know, a couple hundred pounds on their head and they look strong and they're not really exerting that much energy because all the weight is being applied correctly. So our spine is built to deal with what we call compressive force, meaning if it's all aligned right, you can put a lot of force top to bottom. What we're not designed to do is take a lot of force and kind of twist the spine or apply what we call shear forces. That's where you take two discs and kind of slide them against each other. So whenever your posture is incorrect, the harder that force is on the ground, the more those abnormal forces you get. And, you know, and Don and Scott, you know, you've seen this too clinically, you know, and as chiropractors. And, people have herniated discs. And what is it now? About 30 to 40% of our population has herniated discs now. And that's, we're not designed to have that. If you go to a developing part of the world, folks don't have that problem. You know, you don't see these herniated discs and lower back pain in the way we do here in America.
You know, that's a good visual for me. As you were talking about these men and women that carry 200 pounds on their head, you know, walking across the street, you know, that's a good visual for me as I'm, you know, I think I'm going to try to use as I'm running. I'm going to think, okay, what if I had 200 pounds of wheat on my head? I'm not going to be leaning forward. If I'm leaning forward, I'm just going to be using my whole muscular system holding that up versus using my skeletal structure to hold that up.
Yeah, and I think the best visual is you're trying to think of, you know, so to hold that up, we have muscles that when contracted, they lengthen our spine. So when you're holding that weight on your head, you can almost think of it like this. And an analogy is, they had a helium balloon, you know, pulling from the back of your scalp, just pulling straight up. You know, that will keep you lengthened and in the right position. And it can be angled a little bit forward if you're going up a hill. So you want to maintain, you know, a line against the ground. So, but think tall, long lines, efficient, almost like your cross country skiing. You know, if you look at an efficient cross country skier, they're always in a good body position, weights right over the feet, tall, because they have to, you know, apply the stickiness to the ground or else they'll slip.
1206. Do we lose him?
No,
I'm there.
Okay, good. Hey, you know, one of the numbers that I've heard and read and seen published is when our heads are 3 inches in front of our torso. So the head relative to our shoulders and our head is leaned forward, especially, and this really becomes relevant when we're working on computers or sitting and reading and doing different things. 3 inches, the ear in front of the shoulder, that equates to 30 pounds worth of work on the musculature behind them and extra loading on the joints and the spine. And so if we translate that to running, and you're running out there for an hour or 2 or 3 hours, holding an extra 30 pounds and working with those forces while you're running isn't a real efficient use of our body mechanics. Any thoughts on that?
I haven't seen the data, but I can probably follow right up on that, that yes, it's everything in running is multiplied by at least three, because when we walk, we hit the ground with one time our body weight, running about three. So, you know, if you've seen those calculations just for standing or walking, when you hit the ground running, you have a lot more force. So yes, everything does need to be balanced. That's why drills like jump and rope are so perfect, because you have to maintain a good body position to jump rope and practice that and then go run. We have the drill where you just run with a jump rope and you have to keep tall and look straight ahead. As soon as you get out of the proper position, you trip over the jump rope. That's a fun little drill. My daughter taught me that, you know, when she was 6 years old.
So I guess my question is there a direct relation to having this tall, lengthened posture and foot strike? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, you know, I still struggle with my form and I get lazy and heel strike. I'm wondering if that is somehow directly or indirectly related to poor posture.
I mean, I think it's kind of an everything thing. So without proper posture, I think to try to run in good form is kind of a waste, because it's the foundation of it all. So I think the first step for anyone trying to learn to move better is to just stand up better and stand up better all day. And then the running, it becomes unconscious. So they do go hand in hand. I don't think you can look at them in isolation. You know, think about how you sit and stand all day, and then it becomes really easy when you run.
You know, Scott, you may notice that when we go running that I'm usually behind you, and I do that so that you can't really criticize my running form.
Is that why you do it?
That is exactly why I do it. So if you ask me, hey, are you standing up straight or are you heel striking? I can always give you the answer I want you to hear. But I'm constantly critiquing you, so it's probably unfair that I run behind you.
Yeah.
Wanted you to think of that.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Dr. Cucuzzella, you know, one of the things that you said early on in another podcast that I really, really like is that our body has the ability, or the foot and the lower limb, specifically below the knee, can, if you're running at the right cadence, and we talked about 100 in the area of 180 steps per minute, that the body can absorb some of the energy and actually return up to a certain percentage. You told us that. I've got to think that applies to our posture as well, or I hope it does, that some of that fascia even above the knee participates in returning energy to us. Any truth to that?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, and you could just stand up right now and try it. So if you just jump rope, you know, and let your heel come down, you know, you're going to, I can't tell you the exact percent of energy return, but it's a lot less effort than if you'd land on your heel where you get no energy return. Now try to lean forward or lean back and jump rope, and you'll notice that immediately you lose that energy transfer. So yeah, I mean, our suspension system is really kind of foot all the way up into our lower back. It's not just the Achilles tendon or the plantar fascia. It's like a plane landing. And we have this dynamic suspension system that is going to deal with those forces and give you a little back. So if it's all in the right place, it'll do the best for you. I don't think anyone can, there's no real materials or any kind of research tool that can tell us what percent of energy is stored and released versus utilized, because you can't destroy or create energy. It just has to be transferred to a different form. And EMGs and force plates can't tell us that exactly. So people want this exact answer to it, but we can't give it to them. They just need to feel it, and it's there. And you know, all the biomechanical research will show you that there is a storage and release of energy, but we can't say how much is Achilles, knee, hip, but all of it work together.
You know, when I read, go on to some of the different websites.
So in the summary, just do it all right. You know, stand up straight and make sure you're landing with you know, a nicely flexed knee and your foot not out in front.
Stand up
and then
straight.
Things will start to come together.
Stand up straight like your mom said, right? Back to your mom telling you to sit up straight, and we should run the same way.
I'm losing you.
Maybe we shouldn't video. 17 minutes. Hey, Mark, can you hear us? Hello?
You're kind of breaking up.
Mark, let's just go off the video.
We're going to close the video down and see if that helps.
Let's see.
Yeah, I've got you now.
We're going to shut down the video and see if that helps with our bandwidth and connection.
Okay. Here, I'll shut mine.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll turn mine off.
Ours is off. Okay. All right, you got us?
Okay, my video's off.
Yep, and we've got you. Our video's off too. Okay,
yep.
I do have a question. Yeah. Okay. Dr. Mark, when I look at some of the different websites and I see the Qi running style, which I think looks like they're concentrating very hard on body mechanics, and it appears that they are saying many of the same things that I can see on Natural Running Center, but they have the person leaning forward a bit as part of the lean forward and go, and I hope I'm interpreting it correctly, but is that opposite of what we're saying to stand up straight, or is it all the same? Can you clarify that for me?
Yes, I think, I mean, I know Qi running well, and they are very clear that you lean from the ankle, so you're not bending forward at the waist. So there is a slight lean from the ankle. I don't think of that lean as being an active thing. I think it's more of a response to hip extension and being able to utilize your glutes and push backwards into the stride, whereas it being, it's not, to me, running isn't an actual kind of lean in a free fall where you're trying to catch up, but I think all of the techniques really, they all come back to posture, whether it's Qi pose, natural running, or whatever you want to call it, that people are trying to do just to run better. I don't think there's any brand on it. It comes back in people teaching all types of medical, you know, clinics on the same topic, you know, teach the same things too. So whether you're a skier, basketball player, runner, tennis player, the posture is critical.
Good. So the leaning comes from the ankles and not the waist and the hips.
Yeah, you're breaking up a bit here.
Okay, it looks like we disconnected and it reconnected us. So I'll go through and edit all that stuff out.
So
do not lean from the waist. I mean, and we show that kind of in our video too. So that's why, you know, when I teach this, I don't really tell people to lean, because when I tell them that, they'll actually lean forward at the waist. I just tell them to look forward. And this method was taught by Jay Grenke. She's over in London now. But what she says to do, and it makes a lot of sense, is just move your face forward like you're going to give someone a kiss. And what that does, it just shifts you a little bit forward, but keeps you tall and allows you to apply a little force backwards. But you have to go try it. I think listening to it and reading it is one thing, but going and feeling it, something else.
Kissing, you mean?
Yeah.
And
while you're running. Yeah.
You cover that very well on your 8 minute and 24 second YouTube clip, leaning forward. You show some of those drills. Do you not, as I recall?
Yes. Yeah. And real quick at the very end, just try it. Run in place, get tall, lean forward as if you're going to give someone a kiss, but from the face, and then body follows.
Yeah. So get out there and download that video and watch it, and watch it multiple times. I know I have, because you miss subtle things through there.
You know, I think it's interesting. It's probably, you know, the same tall stance, I think, probably translates into many different sports.
You have to compensate. So what happens is you lean back. You know, that you get in the back seat, we call it. I mean, you have to, or else you'll fall down. And this stuff was written about, you know, 40 years ago by William Rosie in his papers. He just shows that, you know, he had a paper called Why Shoes Make Normal Gait Impossible. It's about 40 years old. But it just shows what happens in the whole chain just by elevating up a heel. So if you're going to try to do this and try to stand better and walk better, you know, you have to get out of a heel, because your body won't allow normal position in a heel.
Dr. Mark, how many books have you read on running? You are always throwing down titles and authors that have all this great running wisdom. I want to know how many books you have in your library on running. You're always dropping titles and authors, and it's amazing.
Well, I've probably read most of the old ones and important ones, I think. I spent 6 months on a project for the Air Force that's going to go live here, hopefully within a month, that has to do with running injuries and running form and aerobic development and really every topic that goes into passing a fitness test. So I went back and read most of the textbooks, not, you know, the storytelling books, but wanted to understand it all from, you know, how the engine works to different tissues, how they respond, and, you know, coaching techniques. So yeah, I've got quite a few things, but I think most of, you know, what I've really learned is stuff that was written 40 or 50 years ago that may have a little different spin now, or someone brings it back, you know, to new life. But really, there's nothing new under the sun with any of this stuff.
Well, let's move on. What's the next topic, Don?
Well, let's go with don't overstride. Because that kind of fits nice with posture.
I think that's maybe why a heel strike is I overstride, maybe.
Well, I think that.
Or you think it's more complicated than that?
I think
this one actually goes almost with the same with that third one, which is, you know, move your hand hip to nip, which is we'll kind of tie these two together.
Okay.
Because I think everyone's kind of heard, and pretty much it's clear if they're listening to your show that it's probably not a good thing to overstride, and most people don't even know specifically what that is. But, you know, in my definition, what that is your foot stretched out in front of your knee, so the impact forces are coming back at you. It's not about whether you land on your forefoot or your heel, because you can overstride with a forefoot landing and you could run perfectly normal with a heel strike, mm-hmm. you know, if your body's in the right position. So you have to look at the whole position. Now, one real simple cue, and you can practice this on the trails. So if you just went to some videos and watched people run and slow them down, if you, like, for example, Pete Larson's run blogger site, you know, he's got, you know, high speed video slowed down of really good runners, you know, at the Boston Marathon and middle of the Packers. And what you'll see is that the foot tends to follow the hand. So when you watch a local 5K and you see someone kind of middle of the back of the pack who's got this really long loping stride, and their arm tends to go out in front of them, almost like they're kind of pumping their arms, which means their hand will extend way in front of them. And if you watch, if you draw a line where that hand is and the foot is, they tend to, you know, go hand and foot together. And so that foot will go down way in front of the body because that hand's out there. Now, if you watch a Kenyan run, their knuckles are usually right at their sternum. I mean, just watch it. Just pull up any video.
Yeah,
just watch where their hands are. They're right at their sternum, and maybe they'll extend down. It's a really short arc. It'll go from their sternum to their hip. But if you watch, drew a line of where their hand and their foot is, you know, their hand never goes out in front of them, and therefore their foot never goes out in front of them. It's a balance thing. So if you concentrate on just keeping your hands tighter, it's very hard to reach your foot way out in front of you if your hand is actually kind of tucked into your sternum, almost like you had a little strap there, you know, that just didn't let your hand fly way out in front.
I don't know
if that makes sense, but most folks haven't either tried that or thought about that before.
No, I've never thought about it. I'm going to try that. I like that. And I can see in my mind's eye that the Kenyan runners or any of the runners up front, and they do, they have that tight little, their hands are always in view. It doesn't look like they're overreaching at all. And so I'm going to try that. I like that hint.
Yeah, it's just a really short arc, you know, and their elbows is bent actually more than 90 degrees. So their elbow is probably a little more acute than 90, but that just shortens that pendulum and lets them do a quicker turnover too. You know, they're moving their legs at quicker than 180. They're usually about 190, even up to 200 when they're running faster.
You know, I've seen runners with different forms where their elbows are out more than they are in. Is there any relevance in where the elbows are? I mean, even if they keep their hands hip to nip, if their elbows are out, like they're quacking like a chicken or something like that, is there any?
Yeah, probably not without looking at the whole body, because sometimes if an arm, say, for example, your right arm is way, way out, it's usually a compensation for weakness on the left. So they're on the ground in mid stance. And if they have a weak left hip, you'll see them shift to the left, you know, almost like they're falling. They can't support themselves on that one foot. And then the arm on the right is kind of going wider to compensate for that. Whereas if they're really strong and balanced, everything's a little tighter. So I never try to point out one little thing and micro correct that in anybody. You have to look at the whole picture and see why are they doing it. You know, is it people don't just do things for the fun of it. Usually it's a compensation for something. You have to go back and figure out what that compensation is. You can't fix the arm if it's a hip issue. You know, if they're weak in a hip and the arm's balancing them, try to fix the arm, you're going to screw them up even more.
Yep.
So seeing someone who can really assess you is really the, you know, I get emails as you do about this stuff, and it's just, I have no clue. You know, I can't tell you. You know, I'll do harm to try to fix your form on a video clip too, without seeing what the person does.
So, do you have any reliable resources or places that you recommend that can take a look at running gait? Perhaps it's something you do at your shoe store? Because I know that you do actively have a network of stores with knowledgeable, you know, evaluators in them.
Yes, I mean, we actually have a medical side of our store now called RunMed. It's runmed.org, which is actually part of our store. So I have two physical therapists who will do two-hour full evaluations on runners, you know, some for prevention, some for injury treatment. So they'll do a full kind of what we call like a functional movement screen, you know, which is more of a runner-specific movement screen, and then do a video. Also look at the training that the person's doing. So, I mean, really going back and getting a history, you know, why are they there? What are their goals? You know, what's their volume of running? You know, kind of looking at the whole thing. But, yeah, you really do need that type of time. And we don't have a super high-tech video system. We have a camera that'll slow you down to about 200 frames a second, which is really all you need. Show it on a big screen and let the person see what they're doing. We don't have any force plates or any fancy stuff like that. But in most communities, that there are people that are pretty skilled with this. So out on the West Coast, I know Jay DeSherry's up in Bend, Oregon now. So he'd be the one I would see if you had a specific injury that you wanted to know the answer. He's the best guy in the country for this, and probably worth a trip up there to see him.
Yeah, we'll look that up. And as Scott is our research technician over there, we'll link that to the podcast. I think that'd be great if you did all that work.
Just
Scott
just moved there, so I know he's got a lab up there, and I can get you the link if you can't find it after this.
Awesome. Yeah, that would be great, because as I said at the beginning of the podcast, I sense that for me, when I end up with an overuse injury and I'm not putting in more miles, I think I've slipped out of good form, and I've induced the problem on myself for either being lazy or making some changes that I shouldn't be, and I need to tune it back up. I mean, after all, Tiger Woods has a coach helping him with his swing, and most professionals everywhere have, not that I'm a professional, but people that rely on good form for their career and their the things they're doing. I rely on it so that I can continue running and not end up injured. So I've got to think that form is just so key.
Yeah, as is just your strength. You know, if you sit all day, then you're in trouble when you start to run. So having a stand-up desk, you know, moving all day, standing as much as you can, walking as much as you can, that helps. I think helps more than people know, because if the chassis is not strong, you know, it doesn't matter what your form is, you're going to fatigue. And I think most, you know, a lot of form issues that lead to injury, if you look at when they occur in the later parts of runs. You know, everyone's seen pictures of themselves in these races if they've ever done them. You know, they look pretty good at mile one. And then if it's a marathon, for example, then you see that picture about mile 23 and you look like a totally different person. Everything's kind of falling apart. So, you know, pushing yourself to those extremes can lead to injury, even if you're doing everything right. So I think just knowing when to dial it down, you know, I just did a marathon a week ago, and I probably haven't run a step faster than 8.5 minutes a mile since, because I'm just trying to chill out and recover. There's no purpose in trying to go any faster than that right now.
So Dr. Cucuzzella, when you're out there running this marathon and it's the later half of the marathon or last quarter of the marathon when you're getting tired, what kind of form breakdown do you typically have, and how do you correct that mentally and physically?
Yes, I try not to break down form. I mean, I'm always coming back to, you know, posture and applying the power, the glutes, breathing. So yeah, you try not to break down. As soon as you break down, it's over. So even if it's a mental trick, not until I'm done, and I'm telling myself I'm broken down. So I don't know if that answers your question. So I'm not breaking down. Maybe slowing up and getting tired, but not breaking down.
So is the reason why you're not breaking down is because you're actually mentally checking yourself and thinking about good form? or are you a Zen master that it's just natural to you now?
No, I'm always coming back to it. I don't know what, you know, chicken or the egg, but yeah, I mean, it's always comes back to that. Because as soon as you break down, you start to just lose it mentally anyway, and you start to slow down, and then things get worse and worse and worse.
You start hurting. Getting some strains and pains.
Kidding yourself. Sometimes, you know, it was windy day at Marine Corps Marathon. It was 24 hours before that storm hit. So there are some sections in there where it'd be pretty easy to say, "Oh, forget about it." You got like a 25-mile-an-hour crosswind, but you just have to stay focused.
Dr. Cucuzella, I was handed not just now as I'm sitting here, but over this last week, a copy of it's called Men's Journal, and the article is called Save Your Knees, and it cites in the beginning of the article, it says, we've all heard that people that run are going to wear their knees out, and you always hear that from people that are non-runners mostly. You know, I say, hey, you're going to go out there and go ahead, you're going to run through your knees. And what this article states through some research, and they're citing some recent research out there that says, hey, we're finding that the people that are running have denser cartilage and more volume and less arthritic problems than the people that aren't running. And so it's nice to see that some of these, the mainstream is starting to catch up with what we've been thinking out on the trail or out on the road.
I mean, that's not new data. I mean, that's old data. You know, you can pull up studies. The Stanford study done about 2 years ago said the same thing. And then just observation tells you the same thing. Look around the world of cultures that are much more active. They do not have knee arthritis. The highest attributors to knee arthritis are inactivity and obesity, with number three being high-impact contact sports. Can lead to OA because they're OA meaning osteoarthritis because they're having different issues in the knee than someone who's doing a normal movement like walking or running. So, yeah, those statements came out of conventional wisdom, not by research. People just, they told me that, you know, running's bad for you, wears you out. I mean, they're just people making that assumption. But again, we all need to be skeptical about these assumptions about taking an activity that's a normal activity that it's somehow bad for the body, because it's not true. Do it right, and yeah, you'll protect your knees by loading on the weight bearing.
So if we have some listeners that have led a sedentary or semi-sedentary life, and they're motivated and they say, you know what, I'm going to change my ways and I want to get out there and start running, how can they avoid or help build up these cartilages and soft tissue so that they aren't hurting their knees? Is it just starting out slow and taking it step by step?
Anybody still there?
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't know if I could repeat that question.
It's a great question because, you know, again, it's really an everything thing. So you have to start slow and progressive. The body adapts as you apply a stress to it, but that stress has to be, you know, right at your capacity. If you go much over that capacity, you're going to break. So we get better at anything by applying just the right amount of stress, and then you recover, and then you get stronger. Apply a little more stress, recover, and get stronger. So one of the big problems now is folks are starting their exercise routines after long, long periods of inactivity. They've got a lot of structural weakness, and they're 50 to 100 pounds overweight because they're saying, well, I need to get fit to lose the weight. I need to exercise to lose the weight. So they're exercising on, you know, a chassis, so to speak, that structurally isn't sound, using poor technique, and already have one of the big risk factors for arthritis, which is obesity. So the best strategy is to prevent all of it, which is just stay active from, you know, the time you're able to walk and don't quit. And they're the people that, if you look at the longitudinal studies, have the least arthritis. They're the people that have remained fit their whole lives. You know, they're just, this is a daily pattern for them, not someone who came in it late in the game. So everyone can improve and decrease their future risk just by going out and walking, you know, running lightly, keeping things well within, you know, the margin of extreme fatigue, because that will cause things to break down.
So we have some people out there that that are looking to run, say, the first 50 miler, and you've run 50 miles. You've run the JFK, and certainly have experience with the distance and looking at several people and, you know, their quest to do longer distance. How long do you think, and I know everybody's different, and it depends on their genetics, and it depends on their history, and all of those things. I'm with you on that. However,
what he's saying is you can't use the answer, it depends.
Yeah, no, it depends. How long, if a person said, I really love running, and they go from 0 to 2 years, and they're in a 50-mile race, my observation is that's a recipe for disaster. It takes some time. How much time do you think it takes?
I think it depends on where that person was before that 2 years, you know? So
yeah.
If it was somebody who was, you know, a park ranger and walking 20 miles a day and was massively strong, or was a lumberjack or doing some strong physical work, you know, the running's actually pretty easy and they could probably go out any day of the week and cover 50 miles. You know, that JFK, for an example, when it was based on Teddy Roosevelt's premise, I think it was in 1910 or something, he said that every military officer should be able to cover 50 miles in 12 hours. And he actually made that kind of a mandate for officership.
So
that wasn't unusual. But yeah, you had to do it. And they didn't have fancy running gear or aid stations then. They just packed it in and covered. So when they created the JFK 50 miler, which is the 50th anniversary going to be this year, they brought that premise. That's why they came up with it, was 50 miles, because they wanted to base it on Teddy Roosevelt's thesis or whatever it was, that, his ultimatum that you got to be able to cover 50 miles. So it wasn't any extreme thing back then. Now it's considered an extreme thing, I think, in a modern world. But yes, I think the sweet spot for health is people running 20 to 30 miles a week. And we know that from, it was the Levine study about 4 months ago, showing that people that race marathons and ultra marathons die sooner. Folks, I think we talked about this in one of the other podcasts. Folks asked if that surprised me. I'm like, no, you know, we're not designed to go out and beat ourselves up, you know, week in, week out. You know, we're designed to go out and have some fun and move, and maybe a couple times a year, you know, push it a little further, but not frequently. So I think if someone wants to do a 50 miler, you know, that should be kind of an ultimatum event for them, you know, maybe once every year or 2 years, if they're not accustomed to that kind of distance, and then make sure they get a massive recovery after that.
You know, if we go back to, you know, the Born to Run book and some of that, we're persistent hunters and we're going out there, and I think one of the theories or hypothesis was that in fact, it takes about 26 miles or so, 4 hours out on our feet to chase down an antelope or whatever the game may be, so that we're able to track him and bring him in. That if in fact it takes about 20 to 30 miles, like you're talking about, and that meat will last us about a week, I think that you've dialed it all in.
Oh, you're funny.
Yeah, if you back then, probably you're adapted to it. You're like the lumberjack or the manual laborer, but I'm sure when they're not running, they're sitting in the cave or something, you know, chilling out and eating the meat. We're running around on 14-hour day jobs, you know, taking care of the kids and answering emails the other, you know, waking hours, not recovering.
You know, we just talked to Mike Morton the other day, and we asked him, we said, because he puts in some pretty major miles. Of course, he's been active and running for his entire life. And so he puts in some major miles every week. And we asked him, you know, if he ever takes any breaks, if he has any downtime. And he said, yeah, I do. He says, I have a desk job. So, you know, I go out and run, and then I go sit at my desk job, and that's my recovery. And then I go out and run at lunch, and then I come back in and I sit at my desk and recover. That's the shortest recovery I can think of. But it works for him. It works for him.
Some people are just genetically gifted with the ability of either, you know, just the great body mechanics, quick recovery there. So we hear of the 100-mile weeks and the 120-mile weeks week after week. We all can't do that. You know, we're not all built for that. I know when I try to approach any of those types of miles during the week, I need a week to lay down and just recover.
Now, we are definitely not built for that. I think there's a very thin slice of folks who are, you know, genetically and with jobs that would sustain that, you know, and they knew how to do it smart. You know, if you looked at what, you know, Bill Rogers and Frank Shorter did back in the day, certainly they were amazingly gifted runners, and 100 miles a week for them is like 30 for any of us because they were so efficient. But on their easy days, you know, they would go ridiculously easy. You know, they would have contests to see who could run the slowest, and they'd always run with the group and run with the slowest person. So they figured it out, and they had long careers, you know, 15 to 20 years. So following their path, but, you know, adapt it to where you are, you know, so 140 miles a week for Bill Rogers would be like 50 or 60 for any mortal person.
You know, I think I could do well.
But they knew how to recover, and, you know, he ate a lot of proteins, and, you know, maybe some of it was junk food, but those people ate a lot too to recover.
How many miles do you run, Dr. Cucuzella? We have you after you've told us how many we should or shouldn't. Kind of where do you fit in your building phase and your peaking? How do you juggle this mileage equation?
I'd probably on any given week, if it's just not really gearing up for anything, probably 40 to 50 miles. So if I can get out an hour a day, I'm happy. You know, of that, maybe 45 minutes is actually running, and then 10 to 15 minutes is more strides and drills and skips and things like that. So I don't really GPS anything, but I'm guessing, you know, that's probably about, you know, 7 mile effort. You know, I'll run 6 to 7 days a week. If I'm getting ready for a marathon, I'll do a 2-hour run on the weekend and stay the rest of the days the same. So might get up a little above 50 miles. But again, I've been running, you know, since I was, you know, 8 years old, one way or another, you know, playing tag for hours and hours. So to me, I'm pretty adapted to those kind of distances.
Well, you said 50 miles, and then you said 1 hour a day. So I could run 1 hour a day, but it's going to be a heck of a lot less than 50 miles.
miles a week, you know. So
that's what I meant.
Five.
No, yeah. I'm sorry. I misspoke. But now here's what I also heard you say is that you run for 45 minutes, but you actively put in 15 minutes of drill time, and I'm guilty of not doing that at all. I need to rethink this.
We need to maybe recommit ourselves and put
some drills.
Do some drills, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So the doctor's prescription would be just that. Just don't always go out there and run and slog the miles in. Do some drills before or after the run.
I do them after, and, you know, really it's part of it. I mean, I like to go out and run. So, I mean, I don't think I want to throw out my running because that's kind of the relaxation. But I think if people were really smart, and, you know, they would probably spend half of their time running and half of their other time doing drills and skips and hops and light plyos and things that are helping the strength and coordination and all that stuff. You know, so I'll come back from my run, and as I'm cooking my kids' breakfast, I'll do little box jumps and hops and skips and push-ups and things like that while the eggs are cooking. So some of it extends a little bit further into the day. But, you know, going just in one direction forward all the time for year in, year out, you know, we know that we lose strength, we lose range of motion. It's not a good recipe for the long term.
As you're doing these drills out there, say you're running at an X heart rate, you know, it's variable. You know, Scott and I have different heart rates, and although our perceived effort might be the same, there's a different heart rate there. So do you pretty much match your heart rate to your easy run, or, you know, what kind of intensity do you put into these drills, or do you even consider that?
Yeah, so the drills, I don't wear a heart rate, you know, during drills, and I rarely wear one now anyway because kind of know where I'm at. But and this goes back to really what Lydia did. So the drills you make, your heart rate gets up quickly for a few seconds. They're called alactic sprints or alactic work, meaning you don't build up any acidity. So if you go out and run a quarter mile, you know, hard, you're building up acidity. It's an anaerobic workout. But if you do 40 meters, it's so short that your heart rate gets up, but you're not building up acidity. So you create this adaptation and strength and coordination without getting yourself kind of acidic and toxic and fatigued. So I give full recovery. I do these, they call them ABCD skips. So I'll do a series of skips and then a 40 meter sprint, you know, just to fully recover, you know, 30 to 60 seconds, repeat that. So it's all about the speed and the effort during the drill, which is very short, and then recover fully. So these aren't hard workouts and they're not taxing, but they do get your heart rate up quickly for a very short period of time. if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
It does. Do you have some spots on your multiple websites where you would direct us towards these and we could take a look at them and start dedicating ourselves to improve function and performance?
Yeah, so we have probably that first video we did, the one in Antietam Battlefield. It's called a Barefoot Running Style. We have a little segment in there on the ABCD skips.
Okay.
My next video will be putting out a whole series of these drills, but that's a good one to look at. Anything that's like a light or a light box jump or a, you know, we call them lateral jumps, where you could just pick a line on a track or on your carpet and just skip back and forth, you know, about 10 times, you know, 2 feet first, then go to 1 foot. Things like that help your spring, help your balance. But anything, these are just, they're very similar to just dynamic warm-up stretches too, because you're really, you're stretching and strengthening at the same time. Just doing a 40-meter stride, doing 8 of those, with each time doing it progressively quicker. Another extremely useful thing to do, and this goes way back too, are just these, you know, what Arthur Lydiard had his runners do were these just hill sprints. So I have this little hill on the golf course next to me. It's about 50 meters, but it's really steep. And, you know, so I'll kind of sprint and bound up that instead of 8. You know, it takes me maybe 10 seconds to get to the top. But what that does, it really stretches out the fascia, stretches the calf out. You have to open your hips up. It's not really hard, but it's just this magic exercise that gets the body just so back to where it should be. It's just like stretching, but you're stretching in motion. We have a video on our website. It's called On the Run. It was this 1970s New Zealand video. If you go to Dr. Mark's desk and scroll down, and in the middle of that video, maybe about minute 3, you'll see these hill springs being done, you know, 40 years ago. And his runner did that stuff before they ever did track work, because it built the resiliency to go do track work. If they didn't do this work, they would get hurt. So it kind of got the system all ready to go run hard. But yeah, so that kind of sums it up. Just get out there. If you have, you got to use the terrain you have, you know. So if you have a nice grass field, you know, do strides and sprints, you know, not too many, just enough to give yourself a little stimulus. Find a steep hill, sprint up it. You know, short sprints, do 8 to 10 of those, not these exhausting 2-minute ones, just enough to, you know, stretch the Achilles a bit and get some spring back in you.
Fantastic. And then your website for your shoe store that you have is
tworiverstread.com.
tworiverstread.com. And yes. Faith actually went on and had a virtual consult with one of your employees there at the store and ended up buying a pair of Newtons and is wearing them.
She loves them.
Loves them, wears them, and nice. And really appreciated the full discussion that you provided it, or your employee there provided, and she appreciated the attention.
She said it was a very unique experience, something that she had never done before.
So appreciate.
Yeah, I think we need to do more of that as small running retailers. If you look at the, you know, I think the field's getting crowded now with internets and all these different outlets opening up. I mean, everyone's got a cheap shoe to sell, but what makes a specialty run store different?
Right.
I think is that, you know, that experience we can give a customer.
And we need to value that as people that are consumers. And sure, you can go find a shoe cheaper somewhere on closeout somewhere, but not paying for that good attention and service and knowledge, that's a commodity. We need to... It's more than a shoe. We need to make sure we pay for what we're getting, and because if we don't pay for it, it won't be there.
Yep.
And so we need to do that. So we appreciate you doing that, Dr. Cucuzella.
And the other thing, Don and Scott, that folks should consider when they're shopping for shoes, so we help with 20 to 25 races, local races and kids events through the course of a year. So next time you buy from a big warehouse, you know, why don't you call the CFO there and ask when the last time that they, you know, spent hundreds of hours organizing an event
and volunteering,
you know, hosting, yep, a kids run or gathering. They don't. So sure, you know, I think people just need to realize that if places like ours go away, a lot of the other stuff in the community goes away, because that's the place that supports it.
That's right. Packet pickup happens at the smaller stores.
They're organizing the races. They're doing the permits. You know, putting phones out at 3 a.m.
That's right.
Filling water jugs. You know, believe you me, I'm doing this stuff every weekend, and it's taxing.
Yeah,
so it's fun. You see people, achieving goals. It's good stuff.
Yep, that's what makes running fun. It's fun to run, but the community is fantastic, and people volunteer, and they're optimistic, and we've all made great friends out there, and some of our the best friends that we have socially come right there from volunteering and being part of the community.
I was going to say that I think I've met more trail running friends volunteering than I have running trails, because everybody's so much faster than me. That
at an aid station, you stand around and get to know people and talk to them. And when you're running,
it's a very good social way to do it. And so if you're looking, if you're out there, if you're listening to this podcast, and you're looking for ways to volunteer, go to your local running store and ask.
That's right. They know the contacts. They know the race directors. You bet. Well, Dr. Mark Cucuzzella, thank you so much for coming on Trail Runner Nation here and creating another edition of another volume in your library.
We'll
have to get these on our website too. We've talked about some fun stuff and some good stuff over the last several episodes, which is all good.
You bet. We're happy to share the MP3 file and whatever you like. They're 50% yours.
We just need the links. We'll just put a little tab on our site.
There you go.
You got it.
Well, thanks for joining. And Nation members, thanks for joining us. Go out and run.
Mas. But what you've done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. But what you've done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target. And it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. I've been seeing her for years. She got dark, dark wavy hair, got a voice that you just don't care. She got a skirt with another top. She got a daddy never gave a. She drink a beer with a Montreal. She got knocked up in a pickup truck, but she got engaged when she was 19 to this dude who was acting insane. Had a 45 that he always claimed. She said one day, one day, one too many days. Now we plucked and she ran away, never to be heard from, never to be seen. I took the cover of a magazine. I'm just wondering how, just wondering how. What you done is put yourself between a bullet and a target.